imagine looking at a control dashboard, right? And it tells you the water supply for a city of, I don't know, 2 million people is perfectly clean.
Right.
It's flowing at a normal pressure. The chemicals are balanced. But now imagine that dashboard is a complete lie.
A complete fabrication.
Exactly. It's hallucinated by an AI while the actual physical pumps are silently dumping maximum levels of chlorine into the pipes.
Welcome to the Threats Day Crisis. Today we're bringing you a deep dive into an emergency that, well, it completely redefines the concept of trust in our digital infrastructure.
Yeah, it is a terrifying scenario. And the thing is, it's really no longer theoretical.
No, not at all.
I mean, the briefing we are looking at today from Tech and Analysis, it's dated August 21, 2026, and it details this structural collapse of security architectures across the globe. We've basically crossed a threshold where human speed defense is just structurally incapable of stopping machine speed polymorphic threats. And that is exactly what we're going to unpack for you today. Our mission is to cut through the dense forensic jargon and really help you understand the sheer scale of this.
Right, because this isn't just a spike in software bugs.
No, it's not a new group of hackers trying to steal credit cards. You know, it is an avalanche of autonomous AI-generated exploits targeting everything from the water you drink to the satellites orbiting over your head.
Absolutely.
So to really grasp how terrifying that is, we need to start where the digital bleeds into the physical. The briefing mentions that CISA and the FBI issued these joint warnings about critical infrastructure being targeted. Specifically, they named Siemens S7 programmable logic controllers, or PLCs.
Yeah, the S7 TLCs.
So for those of us who aren't, like, industrial engineers, what exactly is a PLC and why are they in the crosshairs here?
Well, think of a PLC as the ruggedized industrial brain of a physical operation. These are the highly specialized computers bolted onto factory floors that actually govern water distribution valves, energy grid switches, advanced manufacturing robotics. And historically, when attackers wanted to compromise these systems, they were noisy.
Noisy? How?
Like, they would try to brute force a password or inject alien malicious code that intrusion detection systems would, you know, immediately flag as suspicious.
Right. It's the digital equivalent of kicking the front door down.
Very much so. But this new wave of AI synthesized weapons relies on a concept called trust inversion.
Trust inversion.
Yeah. So instead of kicking the door down, the malicious AI disguises its reconnaissance payloads as perfectly benign routine engineering diagnostics.
Oh, wow.
They mimic legitimate Siemens telemetry tools, specifically traffic from systems like TIA Portal or Step 7, and they operate right over standard industrial network ports.
So the intrusion detection system looks at the network traffic and assumes it's just the maintenance team checking the diagnostics.
Exactly.
But it's actually an AI payload mapping out the internal memory of the factory floor.
It goes deeper than just mapping, actually. By leveraging deep reinforcement learning models, models that have ingested massive amounts of industrial schematics, by the way, the script autonomously locates the PLC's internal memory organization.
Okay, so it finds what it needs.
Right, it finds the specific data blocks and organization blocks it needs to manipulate, and it does all this without ever needing to halt the system or cause a noticeable glitch.
I want to pause on the mechanics of that because the briefing details something about a watchdog timer being bypassed, which honestly sounds impossible. Every industrial computer has a hardware watchdog timer.
They do, yes.
It's basically a dead man switch. If the machine's processing cycle deviates by even a fraction of a millisecond, which normally happens if malicious code interrupts it, the watchdog triggers a physical emergency stop to prevent a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So how does the AI get past a hardware failsafe?
By being impossibly precise. Forensic packet inspections revealed that this AI exploit rewrites critical internal memory, specifically OB1, which is the main execution cycle, and OB35, the cyclic interrupt routine. But it rewrites them so perfectly, padding the code and optimizing the logic in real time, that it preserves the exact identical scan cycle execution duration.
Wait, really? It doesn't deviate at all?
It doesn't deviate by a single microsecond. The hardware watchdog never trips because mathematically it just doesn't see a delay.
That is wild. It's like a perfectly forged master key that doesn't just let an intruder into a building. It lets them completely rewire the alarm system, override the vault locks, and loop the security camera footage Ocean's 11 style.
That's a great way to put it.
And all the while, the guard at the front desk is looking at the monitors, completely convinced the building is secure.
The Ocean's 11 analogy is chillingly accurate here, because while the malware is feeding fabricated, perfectly normal sensor telemetry back to the human operators viewing the dashboard, it is simultaneously executing sub-second memory writes that destroy the physical machinery.
Which brings us back to that water supply example we started with. Overriding chemical dosing thresholds is one thing, but the briefing also mentions gas pipelines.
Yes, the acoustic resonance issue.
Right. It says the malware introduces micro delays into the analog to digital conversion processing pipeline. How does a micro delay in a digital processor translate into a pipeline exploding?
It comes down to acoustic resonance. High-speed industrial turbines in gas pipelines operate under immense physical stress. They rely on pressure sensors sampling data thousands of times a second to keep the turbine blades spinning smoothly.
Okay.
So the AI malware desynchronizes the sampling rate of those sensors. It essentially blinds the system for a few milliseconds at a time, which causes the turbine to adjust its speed erratically.
And that causes the vibration.
Exactly. This induces an acoustic resonance, a physical vibration that builds up inside the turbine until it causes catastrophic physical blade failure. And again, the human operator's dashboard reports optimal, smooth laminar flow the entire time.
Unbelievable. Okay, so edge devices and physical controllers are failing spectacularly. But it makes me wonder about the core of our networks.
The cloud infrastructure.
Yeah. I mean, we are actively inviting untrusted AI code to run in modern cloud architecture all the time now. If isolated factory computers are this vulnerable, what about the cloud platforms where all this AI development is actually happening?
That brings us to the second major vector of the threat today crisis, and this is the structural collapse of cloud sandboxing. The briefing highlights a devastating vulnerability in a foundational open source library called Isolated VM.
Isolated VM. What is that doing for us normally?
It is used extensively to quarantine untrusted JavaScript execution in multi-tenant cloud platforms, serverless architectures, and these new AI agent frameworks.
Got it.
If you are building a platform that allows thousands of different users to run their own custom code on your servers, you use something like Isolated VM to create a secure software sandbox.
Right, to keep things separate.
Exactly. It keeps one user's code from touching another user's data without the heavy performance overhead of booting up a full virtual machine for every single task.
But the briefing says this software sandbox completely shattered. It mentions something called cross-context prototype pollution, triggering a use-after-free condition in the C++ binding bridge.
That is a mouthful, I know.
Yeah, you're going to have to translate that for those of us who don't write compilers for a living. What is a use-after-free condition?
Let's break it down. The C++ binding bridge is essentially the translator between the untrusted user script running in the sandbox and the host operating system running the actual server.
Okay.
When a script runs, the system allocates a chunk of memory for it to use. When the script is done, it's supposed to free that memory up for the next task.
Makes sense.
So a use-after-free condition happens when the system gets confused about the type of data it's handling. It officially frees up a chunk of memory, but the attacker's malicious script manages to secretly hold onto a digital pointer to that exact memory address.
Okay, let me see if I'm visualizing this right. Is a use-after-free vulnerability basically like a hotel guest checking out of their room, but they secretly made a copy of the physical room key? And then when the hotel puts a new, highly privileged VIP guest into that same room, the old guest just unlocks the door and walks right in because the hotel forgot to change the locks.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it, yes. The attacker keeps the key to a room they no longer own. When the host operating system puts sensitive data or core execution commands into that freed memory space, the attacker's script uses its copied key to alter that data.
And the briefing says it uses this trick to bypass things like DEP and ASLR. I know those are security features, but how do they factor into this hotel room scenario?
Well, operating systems have built-in bodyguards. DEP stands for Data Execution Prevention. It's like a bouncer that stands inside the hotel room and ensures that whatever is in the room cannot be executed as a malicious command. It can only be read as data.
Okay. And ASLR?
ASLR is Address Space Layout Randomization. That is the system constantly shuffling the room numbers on every floor, making it nearly impossible for an attacker to guess where the VIP data is actually being stored.
But if you have an AI payload that can map the memory layout in real time, It doesn't matter that the room numbers are scrambled because the AI finds the VIP instantly.
Exactly.
And it sidesteps the bouncer entirely.
Exactly that. The guest payload scans the host's memory, resolves the base addresses, and builds an execution chain right inside the host's operating system stack. The guest client completely escapes its sandbox boundary and achieves arbitrary remote code execution on the server itself.
Which means, if you're a company running a multi-tenant AI platform, one malicious user can break out of their little assigned box and suddenly take over the entire server.
I absolutely can.
They can hijack API tokens for OpenAI or Anthropic, extract database passwords. They can literally turn your cloud platform into an autonomous reconnaissance relay to attack other companies.
The multi-tenant security boundary completely evaporates. But to your earlier point, the real terror here is the initial access. To launch these attacks on cloud platforms or operational networks, the AI needs a front door.
Right. I'm stuck on this. You've explained the terrifying damage these payloads do once they are inside the cloud or the factory floor. But how are they actually getting in? These are heavily guarded enterprise networks. We don't just leave the front door wide open, do we?
According to the threats debriefing, the front door isn't just open. The lock is fundamentally broken. We are looking at catastrophic failures of perimeter defense, specifically targeting Citrix NetScaler appliances and Zimbra collaboration suites.
I've seen NetScaler login screens before. They are like the main gateway for remote work at a lot of massive global corporations.
Yeah.
What happened to them?
The briefing details a critical flaw that allows remote attackers to completely circumvent AAA enforcement on these gateways.
AAA meaning authentication, authorization, and accounting.
Yes, the system that checks who you are, what you are allowed to do, and logs your activity. This vulnerability lets unauthenticated bots bypass the AAA system entirely.
Wait, entirely?
Entirely. They gain fully authenticated administrative sessions without supplying valid credentials and without even needing to pass a multi-factor authentication challenge.
Hold on. You're saying an attacker doesn't need a stolen password. They don't need a spoofed fingerprint. They don't need to steal an SMS code. They just walk up to the gateway, send a malformed request, and the system hands them the keys to the entire internal network.
That is the reality of the flaw. It grants direct, unrestricted access to core Active Directory domains. Active Directory is essentially the master key ring and address book for an entire enterprise. Once you control that, you control every computer on the network.
Wow. And what about Zimbra? The briefing mentions Active, then wild exploitation targeting that as well. What is Zimbra?
Zimbra is an enterprise email and messaging suite, heavily used by government agencies and large corporations. The briefing cites an unauthenticated command injection flaw in the SNMP daemon.
Okay, SNMP.
It's the protocol used for managing devices on a network. The playbook here is highly automated and deeply concerning. Autonomous bots are mass scanning the entire public IPv4 space, literally the whole internet, looking for unpatched Zimbra servers.
And when they find one?
They inject shell commands to drop web shells. Basically, remote control backdoors hidden deep inside the server directories. From there, they directly query the integrated OpenLDAP directory,
which holds the passwords.
Right. OpenLDAP is the database that stores all the user accounts and passwords. The bots are dumping the password hashes for every single user in the organization.
This brings it right down to you, the listener. If your company uses these systems, this means your personal HR files, your private corporate emails, your performance reviews, they are all exposed. The briefing even mentions an espionage angle, where automated scripts continuously monitor executive emails for keywords like merger, audit, or SCADA.
And then they exfiltrate that data using encrypted Tor onion circuits.
Why use Tor?
Because most corporate networks have data loss prevention filters. If you try to download 10 gigabytes of executive emails to a random server in another country, the firewall will usually block it. But by routing the stolen data through the encrypted Tor network, it looks like scrambled noise.
So the firewall can't read it, so it lets it out.
Exactly. It proves that relying on a secure perimeter gateway as a trusted defensive wall is a completely obsolete strategy.
I feel like we need to take a collective deep breath here, because just when you think the threat surface couldn't get any wider, we find out this collapse of trust isn't confined to Earth.
No, it is not.
The very same web-based architectural flaws are now threatening systems millions of kilometers away in orbit.
This is perhaps the most sobering disclosure in the entire intelligence briefing. A critical vulnerability rated a 9.4 out of 10 in severity in NASA JPL's open source AMOS instrument toolkit.
What exactly does AMOS do?
AMMO stands for Advanced Multi-Mission Operations System. Specifically, the vulnerability is in the AIT GUI component, which is the graphical web interface used across NASA, commercial space companies, and university labs to monitor telemetry and send telecommands to spacecraft.
Okay, so it's the steering wheel and dashboard for satellites.
Mm-hmm.
And the flaw is staggering. The briefing says there is a total lack of authentication on WebSocket streams and REST APIs. That means the pathways used by the web browser to talk to the backend server don't actually verify who is sending the data.
Correct. It allows unauthenticated attackers to inject forged telecommands directly into the software that controls the spacecraft's instrument command bus.
And it gets worse. Because the software interfaces directly with ground-based radio transmitters, an attacker can use this web flaw to forge CCSDS frames over S-band or X-band uplinks. I had to look this up, but CCSDS frames are essentially the standardized language that spacecraft use to communicate, and S-band and X-band are the massive radio frequencies we use to beam that language into space.
Yeah.
So you have a basic web browser vulnerability that translates directly into a hijacked radio dish firing unauthorized commands into orbit.
It's the equivalent of leaving the keys in the ignition of a billion-dollar satellite, accessible via a standard internet browser that doesn't even ask for a password. And the target spacecraft has no way of knowing the commands are forged.
It just processes them as authentic instructions from mission control.
Precisely.
The physical implications of that are mind-boggling. You could have unauthorized transmission of orbital maneuvers. You could fire destructive thrusters or slew solar panels out of alignment so the satellite loses power and dies. A physical disaster in space because of a missing line of code on a web server.
It highlights a deeply uncomfortable truth. As aerospace engineering adopts modern, convenient web-based telemetry interfaces, they inherit all the standard internet vulnerabilities.
All right. We've got physical factory controllers hijacked by AI, cloud sandboxes escaped, enterprise front doors kicked open without passwords, and satellites at risk of being spun out of orbit. How does the global engineering community actually defend against this? You can't just release a software patch for a fundamental collapse of trust.
You can't. It requires an immediate fundamental overhaul of global security architectures. We have to move away from reactive patch-based models. For operational technology, the industrial sector, the mandate is transitioning to a zero-trust Purdue model.
What does that actually look like in practice?
It means deploying industrial deep packet inspection firewalls. These are appliances that sit on the factory network and cryptographically authenticate every single command sent to a machine. Furthermore, it mandates physically disabling write permissions to the memory blocks on those Siemens PLCs we discussed earlier.
Let me stop you there because I want to push back on the reality of this. You're talking about physically disabling write access to industrial computers. Doesn't that mean if a power company wants to update the software on a substation, an engineer has to physically drive out to the middle of nowhere, unlock a metal cabinet, and flip a physical switch just to allow the update?
Yes. It is a massive regression in convenience, but it is the only way to mathematically guarantee that an AI cannot rewrite the machine's safety protocols over the network.
That is going to cost billions in operational overhead. And what about the cloud? We can't put physical switches on cloud servers.
For the cloud, we must acknowledge the structural collapse of software-based sandboxes like isolated VM. The industry has to migrate to hardware-assisted micro-virtual machines, technologies like AWS Firecracker or Google GVisor.
How does a micro-virtual machine stop that hotel key use after free attack we talked about earlier?
Because it moves the boundary from software to hardware. A micro-VM instantiates an independent, minimal Linux operating system kernel for every single untrusted task. Even if the malicious AI uses its copied hotel key to break out of the software program, it doesn't hit the main host server. It hits a hardware virtualization boundary managed by the hypervisor.
Oh, I see.
The physical processor itself simply will not allow the guest code to read or write to the host's memory. The memory corruption is stopped cold at the silicon layer.
Okay, that covers the cloud and the factory. But what about the enterprise endpoints? The laptops and desktops used by employees? The briefing heavily emphasized the threat of BYOVD attacks. Bring your own vulnerable driver. What does that mean?
Well, operating systems require drivers to talk to hardware, like a graphics card or a network adapter. And these drivers run at the kernel level, the deepest, most privileged part of the system.
Right.
Attackers have realized that instead of trying to hack the kernel directly, they can just bring an old, outdated hardware driver that Microsoft legally signed years ago, but which has a known vulnerability.
Ah. So they install an old graphics driver, use the known flaw in that driver to gain kernel access, and then use that access to forcefully turn off the company's antivirus and endpoint detection software.
Exactly. To combat this, enterprises must enable HVCI, or Hypervisor Protected Code Integrity.
Another acronym. What does HVCI do?
Think of it as the hardware checking the software's homework before it is allowed to run. Under HVCI, kernel mode memory pages are strictly validated by the virtualization hardware before execution.
Okay.
So even if a driver possesses a valid cryptographic signature from Microsoft, if the hypervisor sees it trying to execute arbitrary payloads in restricted memory, it blocks it.
And finally, for the aerospace sector, securing those spacecraft command buses so anyone with a web browser can't hijack a satellite.
The mandate there is enforcing hardware-backed MTLS or mutual TLS.
Which is basically a two-way secret handshake. It's not just the satellite verifying the ground station. The ground station has to cryptographically prove who it is for every single transmission.
Precisely. And that cryptographic proof must be tied to hardware security modules. Every single command submitted to a console like the AMMOS toolkit must contain a short-lived, digitally signed operational ticket generated by a physical hardware token. That eliminates the threat of unauthenticated command injection at the network edge.
So if you are listening to this and you manage any kind of digital system today, the takeaway is stark. Assuming your network is safe because you have a firewall or a complex password requirement is simply no longer viable. Every privileged session must be continuously verified, and you have to assume that if a piece of code is running, it could be hostile. The Threat Today crisis proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that the digital and physical realms are now irreversibly merged. Cybersecurity is no longer just an IT concern about keeping a website online. It is a matter of physical human safety, grid stability, and orbital mechanics.
It demands a total cognitive shift from defenders, but, you know, it also leaves us with a final, rather provocative scenario to consider as we look to the future.
What's that?
Well, if offensive AI can autonomously discover zero days, write polymorphic exploits, map memory layouts, and navigate networks faster than human incident response teams can even read a security alert, how long until we are forced to hand over the keys of our entire defensive infrastructure to our own autonomous AI agents?
Wow.
And if we do make that leap, what happens when two non-human AIs go to war inside our critical infrastructure, making millions of decisions a second, completely removing human operators from the loop?
It's a terrifying thought. You build a fortress, you check the locks, you trust the system because you designed the system. But when the invisible contract of trust is rewritten by machines at speeds we can't even perceive, you have to ask yourself, who is really guarding the gates? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the implicit trusts in the systems you rely on every day.